Welcome to Starfleet Universe On Call. I am Paul Franz, owner of Franz Games. I have an SFB Online, FedCom Online, and Starfleet Warlord. Just my heart, join us for the podcast every Thursday starting at 9:30 p.m. Eastern Time. You can either join us on the phone, just dial 605-562-0444. Just follow the directions. The call ID is 17702. Or you can participate on the web. Just go to the TalkShoe website at www.talkshoe.com. And search for Call 17762 or Starfleet Universe On Call. Either one, you will find us. And of course, we do a co-broadcast over on twitch.tv. So you want to watch us on Twitch and join in on the chat room, just go to twitch.tv/SFU On Call. You'll find us there. Of course, there's also the Twitch apps if you want to. You can download those and participate that way. And of course, if you need to contact me for any reason, my email address is sfuoncall@gmail.com. That's sfuoncall@gmail.com. Also, if you want to follow me on the Twitters, my Twitter account for the podcast is sfuoncall. You know, you can find out what is going to be the topic for this evening. And of course, you can get all the wonderful posts about the YouTube videos that we also post of the video that I stream over onto Twitch. And of course, I have my personal account, which is Paul Franz, PaulFranz. And that's, you know, if you want to follow me, that's great. I'm an avid O's fan. I am very happy to be a Catholic. And also, I love all kinds of tech. So if any of those bothers you, then don't follow me. And of course, if you want to, follow Franz Games and you get hear the latest on that and, you know, what's happening on Starfleet Warlord and SFB Online, the FedCom Online, things like that. And of course, this lovely TalkCast gets turned to a podcast available on iTunes and various other feeds around the net. Some quick news from A to B this week, not much, you know, mostly on the personal side. And that is Jean Sexton is recovering from her surgery. And also, but she's doing well. So she's actually started posting on Facebook again for ADB, which is wonderful because I'm not quite sure. I don't think Steve Cole knows exactly how to post. Actually, I'm pretty sure they didn't give him rights to post on Facebook because they're afraid of what he would say. But we will see. So we'll be seeing news from A to B in the near future. So we'll be hearing about the latest products that are coming out and all that kind of things. And so that we'll get a good update. And that's one of the reasons why I always check the page every single week, if not every single day. Every single week, because Lord knows I hate Facebook. But I'm still on there because of you guys are there. So that's why I'm there. So also, some quick news from Steve Petrick. There has been some updates, and which is he should be able to go home next week. He's going to be moving on to a cane. Currently, he's having a minor issue with dizziness, and they think that's related to his medication. So they are adjusting his medication, and in which case, so that by next week, he should be able to use a cane and walk around without that kind of effort. Though, from looks from Steve Cole, he may have to do a little move from currently he's outside of Amarillo to being actually in Amarillo just because of he might not be able to, well, he still has to be approved to drive because of his diabetic, you know, his eyes when it comes to his diabetes. So he has to pass tests when it comes to that. Moving onward and forward, not much happening when it comes to SFB Online. Of course, we have the Neck Kills tournament going on. So that is always going forward. And if you want to, you can check out the latest standings there. You know, and please, you know, join in the fun. And, you know, and all you have to do is stop by, you know, and play, you know, find someone to play a tournament game with you. And you then, you know, obviously tell them there's going to be a net kill game. And then after it's all done, then the loser will then report it. You know, and, you know, that's why you tell people before they start, because then they'll know that they have to report the game after the game is done. So after that, you know, the loser reports the result, and you can continue on. If you play enough games and you win enough games too, that you can you can win a 3-month extension to your subscription. So that's a nice $15. Or if you have both SFB Online and FedCom Online, I will extend both. So it'll be obviously that's worth more. That's worth $20 for that quarter. No, there's no net kill for FedCom at the moment. You know, we only have net kill for SFB. Sorry. Now, if there's enough FedCom going on and enough, well, if that is the case, then we'll figure out some kind of net kill for FedCom, which I think would be kind of a neat idea, is having a net kill for that. Obviously, it's going to have to be something more along the lines. I think I actually have a room called FedCom Duel, which I forget what it's one of those things I created many years ago. The idea was to make a equivalent to the tournament rooms for FedCom, and I don't remember what I have set up for the ships for that. But anyway, moving onward and forward, when it comes to Starfleet Warlord, we have a new Die Hard game starting next weekend. Yes, we do. And if you've been watching the Franz Games Twitter feed, you'll see that. Or if you actually are part of the Starfleet Warlord group on Facebook, you'll see it there too. I probably should also post it up on the website. But and also I send out the emails to those people who are Starfleet Warlord people that signed up for Starfleet Warlord. So I send out reminders that there's a new game coming. So please, if you like playing Starfleet Warlord, or you haven't played it for a while and you want to get back to it, then come on, join us for a new Die Hard game. Actually, we have an oldie, a veteran player coming back after being gone for many, many, many a year. That's Roger Reardon, which is good to see. All the more, the merrier, you know. I'm hoping to see some of the more veteran players maybe come back, which would be good, though. Some of them I don't think will come back. And that is the news for this week. And it's me, Seth, one of all Paul friends, welcoming you to Starfleet Universe On Call. And tonight, well, it's me, it's Dave. I'm sure Chris will probably show up, and possibly even Iggy. At the moment, I don't see... excuse me. I hope you didn't hear that, because I just noticed I forgot to turn off the sound on my iPad because of it's streaming the audio, the video, so that I can see what you guys see, and so that if something happens, I can know that something happened. I do it for monitoring purposes, basically, and also I want to be able to be in the chat room, and I hate Twitch. At least I hate the client. When it comes to the iPad, I want to do something which I don't think it's designed to do, which is monitor my own stream and chat in it. It's designed for you to watch someone else's stream and chat in it. So it's like, okay, so I can't use it the way I want to use it. Now, I understand when it comes to Twitch and me, in that I have a kind of unique situation, the way I see it. And that is, most people that probably do Twitch streams have multiple monitors and that all set up and all that kind of thing. And one, I don't have the space for multiple monitors. Two, I hate multiple monitors because I tried it one time and I had the problem with my head going back and forth, and it just drove me absolutely insane. I couldn't take it because of when you have windows and you don't know where that window is, you have to go back and forth. You know, I don't remember where my windows are. I can't say, oh, always to my right is going to be this window, always to my left is going to be this window. No, I don't know where my windows are going to be. That might sound seem silly to some people, but it isn't. So, anyway, Barry is not going to be here this week. I texted him earlier, and he said that he might be here, and I currently see that he is not here at the moment, which is fine. He's got a busy work schedule, and as is the last week, Barry was so was busy because he was still working, which my guess is he's currently on the West Coast, so which makes a lot of sense versus being on the East Coast and working past 9 o'clock at night, which is nuts. But hey, I'm sure that he gets paid pretty good money if he does. But anyhow, getting to the topic for this evening thing. Oh, cool. Chris was mentioning that Iggy won't be joining us tonight just because of he is playing Advanced Squad Leader, which is a cool game. Mention about Advanced Squad Leader because we haven't really started. It and Starfleet Battles came out around the same time, and they both, I think, actually, I don't know if Advanced Squad Leader has anything like the Designer's Edition of Starfleet Battles. A more a simplified version. The way how in this case, SFB started small. The Designer's Edition and I forgot the Pocket Edition was before that. Okay, I had to remember that was the first edition was the Pocket Edition, because back in when I first got introduced, which was in my case, I was introduced to the Starfleet Battles back in 1983. The original game came out in 79, if I recall correctly, which was the Pocket Edition. And back then, back in the 70s, late 70s, early 80s, they had these, they were selling these games, which were basically pocket games. Today, one of the makers of those are like Cheap Ass Games, who make simplified games. They don't take a lot, and in case of those games, they don't have a lot of material. They assume that you'll have your own, get your own game parts and things like that. And oh, Panzerleader. Oh man, Dave. Oh, you bring me back. I've never played Panzerleader. I've never played it, to be honest. I remember playing Tactics 2 back with my best friend back in. I'm trying to remember if I'm pretty sure it was high school. Yeah, I know it was high school, and I forget what grade it was. Because the problem is, back in high school, my friend was going to private school and I was going to public. So the only time we saw each other was, after school and during the weekends. So we played Amiibo Wars. Oh yeah, I remember that too. Wow, taking me, guys, you're taking me back. Yeah, back, well, sorry, my back, around, I think it was 81, 80, 81, 80, I forget exactly when it was, but me and my best friend played Tactics 2, which was interesting. I still think it's an interesting game. Obviously, it's something like Panzerleader in that it is a tank game. I forget. I know I know it wasn't. There weren't that many rules. There was a lot of. There was quite a bit of rules, but it wasn't, so bad that we couldn't play it. Yeah, and of course, Tactics 2 was also an Avalon Hill game, which was awesome. One of the Avalon Hill games that we had at my house was Stocks and Bonds. Simplified Stocks and Bonds. Now, that actually, that one was a very popular game for for my family. We play stocks and bonds a lot. We love Stryker and what was it? Because of course Stryker was the stock that was going, we go up and down like crazy, and you know, and that's one thing with stocks and bonds. If I recall correctly, I remember we had the little slide out which would tell us what was the market, the stock value for that turn. And if I recall correctly, we actually had to roll dice to see what would be its value for that turn. And each one of the stocks had its own kind of scale, basically. Stryker was high, you know, big highs, big lows. When it comes to some of the other ones, I forget. Stryker's the only one I remember really vividly because of the highs and the lows. But some of the other ones, you know, had more gentle curves and so forth. And of course, you had bonds, which stayed the same. You know, so you could put your money in bonds, and you get a good return. But you know, you would not. But you wouldn't. You know, you wouldn't earn much with bonds. But you know, that's why you invariably you have some stocks with Stryker, so that you could actually put some of your money in Stryker, so you could actually earn more, you know, some more money that way. It was an interesting game. I enjoy stocks and bonds, and so I played my brothers multiple times on that game. I think even my sister was included in that. I forget if Ellen played or not. My parents didn't play. But we as a family we played a lot of Pinochle. As I mentioned, I think last week, Sheep's Head was one of the card games that we played. And actually, I used to play my cousins in Milwaukee. That's because my father was from Milwaukee. So we learned Sheep's Head, which is it's one of those card games I've not played for a while. Because the problem is we only would play it. Sheep's Head is the only time we would actually play that would be when we went to Wisconsin. That's the only time we play it. Or I guess every once in a while we play at home, but not that much. We play more Pinochle than anything else. I think, was it Hearts? I forget, there was another bidding game that we used to play, and I forget. But we liked bidding games. We never did, as a family, we never did play bridge. My parents, they played bridge. And as I mentioned last week, they invite their friends over and so forth. But bridge was one of those things that we never were taught, which was interesting, given how much my parents played. And, you know, so we like those bidding games. Anyway, to get back to the actual topic for this evening, instead of reminiscing about old games that we used to play, which there's nothing wrong with that because... Starfleet Battles has a long history. So does ADB. ADB has a long history of creating games, including Starfire. Actually, I have some of the older games that ADB created. If you don't mind me for a moment here, folks, I want to do a really quick check to see if I have those of. See if I have them right off my on my computer here. No, that wasn't theirs, was it? Oh yeah. Oh that. Oh okay. That is. Don't mind me. That's MJ12 Games. I don't see them. Oh, that was one. Oh, yeah, Robots and yeah, Task Force Games came out. Oh, this Task Force Games. I don't know. Let me look at the back of it. Let's see. Do they have okay? The designer of Spellbinder was Vance Buck. This is one of those things. Okay. A little bit of history here. Spellbinder was a game owned by Task Force Games. Task Force Games was the publisher for ADB. And of course, the Task Force Games fell into trouble. Fell into trouble, and so basically, Task Force Games basically liquidated, and all the assets, for any of the games that they had, they basically sold. They gave them, sold or gave? I'm not sure. My guess is it was part of an agreement to he'd give them the distribution rights for those games. I'm not sure when it comes to the IP rights. My guess is that the IP rights are still with the authors, but the actual actually, I don't think I could probably check with ADB about them, because if I wanted to, reason why I ask, I think about it, is that if I ever wanted to create a game, an actual online game based on the game, like Spellbinder or some of the other Task Force games, who would I talk to? Would I talk to, could I talk to ADB about a licensing deal for those? Or would I actually have to try to contact the designer? Does the designer still own the IP rights for that? Versus, ADB might just own the distribution rights for that game. And we all know, of course, Starfire was also distributed by Task Force Games, but it was originally designed by Steve Cole. Now, the one thing I don't know what happened, which was Marvin Lamb took over Starfire. I'm not sure what happened there, whether Marvin Lamb bought the IP rights completely from ADB, or what happened on that. Okay, robots, another Task Force game. It's one. Check to see if right here at the back, that one was created by Mike Joslin and William Ferguson, which was another interesting one. Robots. I'm just gonna read this really quick for people. Robots is a science fiction game of fast action, sudden destruction. Players construct their own robots by combining weapons, guns, gun missile or laser with chassis module, track, hover or droid. Newly constructed robots move out from the factory, salvage ships to capture resource areas, then mine the resource to produce new robots, which then capture more salvage areas. So, wow. That's actually interesting. That sounds interesting, because basically what you're doing is you create, I'm assuming you create a certain number of robots to start off with. And you both start with a certain EEPs kind of thing. And then you would go to the battlefield, you would then try to get more resources. And at the same time, your opponent's also trying to either deny you those resources or getting the resource themselves, so that you can build more robots. Now, I don't know, the whole mechanics become logistics. Do you have to bring the materials back to the salvage ship, or do you just have to collect them and then they're magically transported to the salvage ship? I don't know. I have not read the rules, so I don't want to say one way or the other. And anything else? I'm just wondering if I have anything else of theirs. No, I do not. Because this one, let's look at this for a moment. Okay. I forgot what this was. Oh, okay. Sorry, I notice I have an PDF file which is called Harmonizing Imperium and Warp War, which is, it's actually, let's quick read of the introduction here. William Peters, a classic space gamer article, William and Warp War made for each other? Question mark. Suggests a wonderful idea of using warp war rules to fight out Imperium space combat, but this basic concept needs some elaboration and detail, which Peterson article does not provide. He admitted not to have tried this out this idea, and so do I. But in what follows, the actual rules are denoted by bullets, with commentary, rationale, and non-bulleted paragraphs. The article is written with respect to the rules of the first GDW edition of Imperium and the original metagaming Warp War rules, which actually I remember owning a copy of Warp War. And I do not foresee any major problem in applying them to other editions of Imperium, not to mention Dark Nebula. And I've not exhaustively looked into that option, which is basically a combination of the interesting part about Warp War in my mind, and then I think I'll get on to the topic for this evening, which is Warp War. The interesting part about Warp War is that there was no dice. There is no dice in Warp War. It's not random, which to me is, that aspect is just interesting. It's fascinating where you try to create a game which has no randomness. You know, which is interesting, you know? I forget exactly how damage and is calculated and whether a weapon hits or not is calculated. I think, if I recall correctly, it's based on, I'm thinking it might be based on speed and range. You know, based on how accurate it is. And I'm not sure if the weapons actually are relative or they're hit and miss kind of things. Obviously, in theory, it could be either one. Especially if it's based on certain factors overall. But anyway, talking about weapons, that is going to be this evening's topic. We're going to talk about SMB rules, the weapons rules. This is section E. Obviously, for those of you keeping count, that is, I skipped from section C to section E. So I figured, weapons actually, for the most part, is a little more interesting than combat. But at the same time, I think that it's important to talk about the weapons before you talk about the combat. Because until you know about the weapons, combat is pretty abstract. You know, that's where you need, in my mind, to learn about combat. And the thing is, Section D is not just about combat per se. It's also about defense. You know, because that's section, rule D10 is power absorbers, i.e. the Andromeda's power absorbers. When it comes to, I think it's D3? I think D3 talks about what shield you hit and things like that. Now, obviously, you can't use a weapon without knowing about combat. But at the same time, you can't really do combat without having weapons. So, I'm going to go with the approach of going through some of the weapons and also some of the weapon rules. And, of course, this is the E section. So, for those of you out there who don't know about SFB or don't know the rules of SFB that well, E section, that whole section of rules for E that are labeled start with E, that is your direct fire weapons. Things that start with F. F is your seeking weapons. You got FD and you got FP. FD is for your drone racks and that kind of things. FP is for your plasmas. Now remember, this is the original rule set. The original rule set does not include the Omegas. Doesn't include LMC. See, that which is one thing that I'm sure anyone who's followed me, and listened to the podcast enough knows about this, which is one thing that always bothered me about the Omega rules. Because I understand with the Omega rules that there's this thing, you should just use basically the Alpha rules and with these mono modifications. The problem, the biggest issue I have with that at all is that it makes the rules feel disjoint. Because when you do that, it's not the flowing. Yes, okay. Yes, I think for people who know the alpha rules, that they can just say, oh, yeah, I know this, know this, know this, know this, know this, know this. Why are they repeating this? Why are they wasting the space? But at the same time, it gives a better flow. Because to my mind, there's only two ways of solving the problem. One, repeat the rules for Omega, for the phasers, because the phasers are awful. They're dreaded. They're awful. Meaning that the way that they're written. Now, the weapons themselves and how they define them is fine. It's just that, you know, you say, oh, well, they use the alpha, you know, alpha phaser rules, but here's your modifications. Or you can actually, the other solution, obviously, is to make the Omega and the alpha rules into a single book, rule book, which I kind of prefer, you know, that a master rule book, it'd be a master rule book, you know, an all-encompassing rule book for all the rules versus, you know, we have the master rulebook is basically the rules for the alpha octant. So, onward and forward. Okay, we're going to start, of course, with the beginning of weapons fires, which is procedure for how do you fire your weapons. Yeah. Oh, well, yeah. Elm seems. But okay. You know, saying when, of course, that's going to be the direct fire announcement segment for the impulse. Now, as I mentioned, it's mentioned here that there's no counters for direct fire weapons, which is true. Number three, which is E1.13. Simultaneous fire. Two units firing at each other during the same impulse are presumed to fire simultaneously at exactly the same time. The fire of both is calculated and determined before damage to either is applied. So, which is important. That's why, you know, okay. I'm going to go back to the announcement part, which it states that there's no kind of a player symbol indicates his ship and the target and says, for example, I'm firing two fire forward phasers at your ship unless specified otherwise. A given weapons description, a player must announce the arming status of a weapon, you know, overload, proximity, fused phaser two is the phaser three, etc., before rolling the dice. And also, another thing which is important, because this is important for the Andromedans, which is E1.17, which is wasted fire. A player always has the option of simply firing his weapon into open space. Doing so imposes a delay, you know, 1.50, which is basically, that's the, you're only allowed to fire once per turn, and you have a minimum number of impulse you have to wait between firings. And note that heavy weapons may be discharged under E1.24, which is, okay. I'll get to that in just a moment. Now we have the general, which is, of course, weapons can only be fired once. Now, with specific exceptions to that rule, some of those mentioned in E2.213, which is Gatling phasers, anti-drones, Maulers, MCIDs, and PPDs are accepted from the limitation of firing once per turn. Yeah, big surprise. Unit target hex, the presence of a unit in the same hex as the target or in hex between the firing unit and the target has no effect. Basically, in SFB, you can't block fire. Let's say you have three hexes, you know, one, two, and three. if you have a ship in the middle hex, it won't block fire between a hex and 1 and 3. So, you know, and it's just like the whole thing I talked about last week, which is that there is no stacking limitation in SFB. You can have as many ships as you want. At the same time, ships themselves can't basically protect other ships from fire when it comes to direct fire, that is. That's, for the most part, the case. There are some minor exceptions. One of those exceptions, of course, being hellbores. It doesn't mention it here, but I'll just mention it now, which is, of course, that if you have the whole ASG hellbore interaction, in that if you have a, you know, again, the three hexes, 1, 2, and 3, you have a Hydran here with a hellbore, you have a Lyran ship here, and you got a Lyran ship here, but this Lyran ship has the ESG. If you fire from this hex here to this hex, you're trying to fire this ship, you're firing through that ship, and it automatically hits. At least that's my understanding. No, because it tracks it. So, it's one of those exceptions to the rules. Now, of course, when it comes to heavy weapons, the one thing you can do is, as of, you know, according to rule.E1.24, is discharge. Various rules require that loaded direct fire weapons be discharged, but instead of unloaded, fire into empty space, allowed to dissipate if it cannot be fired. In other words, in the case of, let's say, an overloaded hellbore is another example, which is, you can't hold an overloaded hellbore. So the only thing you can do is, if you ever overload your hellbore, you have two things. You can fire it, and if you can't fire it because of your opponent never gets into range, then your only other option is going to be discharging. Now, the benefit when it comes to hellbores is not as much of a benefit. It is for, let's say, that you have an overloaded disruptor. An overloaded disruptor, that makes a difference. Because of with an overloaded disruptor, let's say that you overload it and you never get into the overloaded range for your opponent. Or you know, like, or he's out of arc. And or you don't wish to fire it on this turn. Because you might have it all set up for a good all lined up by the end of the turn, but you said, you know, I don't want to fire this turn. I want to fire it next turn. Why at the moment? You know, that's up to you. You might want a bigger punch. Bigger punch also means more preparation by your opponent. But we're not talking about tactics here. But the benefit here is that if you have an unfired weapon that you've charged and you have to discharge it, whether it's overloaded or not when it comes to disruptors, if you still have it charged at the end of the turn, you have not fired it, you have to discharge it. Now, the great thing about discharging versus just firing into open space, as in rule 1.17, E1.17, is that you can fire it immediately. So you could, if you discharge an impulse, you know, at the end of the turn, don't mind me, my hand warmer. You can then fire an impulse one. In other words, so that you don't have to, also, the great thing about discharging versus firing in open space is that you still have that threat. You know, tactically speaking, you still have a threat you still have your weapons charged. And so if someone comes in, you can fire your weapons at them and they might not come in. But if you fire your weapon just to discharge it into open space because you're not going to be firing it, and you do that, like, let's say impulse 24, there's 8 impulses. He might decided to come, basically come barreling in on you. Now, of course, here's the gotcha about that, which is it could be a tactic to say, yeah, come on in. Because you know he won't do that much damage before the beginning of next turn. In which case, come on in. I fired at you. I'm no threat. But then you charge, your weapons are ready for next turn, and you wipe them. because he's gotten closer in. Because he made a dumb mistake. Now, of course, effects, which is on 1.3. Tables. There's, of course, different kinds of tables. And weapons, direct weapons, there's two kinds when it comes to these tables. You got the hit or miss. That means either you, like a disruptor, you hit full amount of damage. Standard or overload, whatever. But it's full damage, or you got nothing. Or you have range of effects weapons, that which are like phasers. Where phasers depends upon what your die roll is, and it will do better or worse, but depending on the die roll, versus complete hit or miss. And then, of course, then there's the firing, which I mentioned, which is no weapon may be fired twice within a period of 1/4 of a turn, i.e. 8 impulses. Now, but there, of course, even with that, there are certain exceptions. For example, Gatling phasers, those can be fired every impulse. As long as you don't fire, up to the 4 shots that you can fire with a Gatling. Again, this one thing I mentioned is rapid fire. Certain weapons are specifically capable of firing more or less rapidly. For example, Gatling phasers. Now, a reminder about that, the firing rate, of course, is that, as it mentions, there are some that are less frequently. I.e., one of the examples is the particle cannon for the Saltorians. It only can fire more than once a turn, but also the firing rate is only once every 12 impulses, not once every 8 impulses. Next is, of course, narrow salvos, which is something which the feds love. Is it advanced? Actually, it is an advanced rule. In normal gameplay, it can be used. Now, here's always the gotcha with narrow salvos, and you always have to worry about these suckers. Narrow salvos, it's an all or nothing deal. Let me just look at this. Okay, narrow salvos, as defined by the rule, is 2 or more direct fire weapons, unless otherwise specified, can be fired in a narrow salvo. This is basically all or nothing proposition. All the weapons of the salvo will use the same die roll. Usually a weapon fired simultaneously are fired into a pattern that ensures at least some hit on the target, but preclude max effect. Narrow salvos concentrate the fire of weapons into a single point where there's less chance of success, but the success is devastating. Lord knows, anyone who's played SFB against a Fed knows that if the Fed uses a narrow salvo for his photons, especially at range, because that's when they would do it, is at range. If they miss, it's a big whiff. But if they hit, you are so screwed. especially like the general like range 8 overloads, which are in the case of the feds, is just devastating. The good thing about a range 8 overload when it comes to narrow salvos is that the fed can hit devastatingly. He can roll, like, say, on this one die roll, I either hit or miss. And if he misses, he can fly away. Now the question is, of course, do you ever want to do an all or nothing die roll like that? It's your choice. You can either, there's two philosophies on it, which is, of course, you want the big, hit factor. And especially if you have a slim chance, if your chances are lower, that you could really, devastating effect. But at the same time, wouldn't you rather average it over multiple weapons so it evens out the curve? Now, it's possible that evening out the curve won't do what you need it to do. Because to you, it might be that, that if you fire your weapons in a narrow salvo, you can actually do internals. But unless you hit with everything or most of them, you won't get through, and it's going to be a waste of fire. It could be a waste of fire. Don't know. Now we move on to E1.7. Now I know this is slow, and that's because we're talking about weapons fire here and some of the rules based on weapons fire. We haven't even gotten to the weapons yet. Now, E1.7, which is small target modifiers, which is for those little tiny little shuttles. Here's the target types, which are admin shuttle SWACs, MSS, which are the mine shuttles, MRS, MLS, HTS, GAS. In other words, those are ground support shuttles. And heavy fighters, they have a certain effect, because of things like heavy weapons have to use a small target modifier. Now, this is considered ECCM. No, sorry, this is considered ECM from a natural source, which means they can be additive. They're not limited to the amount of ECM that can actually be produced. This can be added onto any ECM. And for those targets that I just listed, that's 0 to 11. Now, a fighter or a drone, it's 0 to 9. But a nimble ship, as weird as it might sound, nimble ship, including PFs, interceptions, they get ECM points. Shocker. So range to 0 to 14, yeah, there's no small target modifier, but outside of that, 15 to 9 to 29, you get 2 points, a plus two ECM points for a nimble ship. And out the past range 30, a nimble ship gets a plus four ECM. So it's like one. That's one of those things, people, that you have to keep in mind when it comes to fleet battles. And now I'm hoping that's this. Okay, that was bad. And of course, the it mentions here at E1.8, which is dirigible modifiers, which is, of course, the ECM modifiers, electronic warfare, ECM and ECCM. That's talked later on in the system ship systems, I think. And you have to add that to your die roll. And in some cases, for those people who don't know about EW, when it comes to, if you have a plus shift, when it comes to, obviously for hit or miss, it's hit or miss. But the weird part is for those range of effect weapons, those charts. Because what will happen is, you got, of course, one through six over here. And then the idea is that if you hit the bottom, like let's say you roll a five and it's a plus three for an ECM shift, then, so Chris is mentioning that the D6 section. So next week when we get to combat, we'll be discussing EW. And what the goofiness about it is that it goes down the bottom of the chart. So if they say, you know, roll a five and it's plus three, then you go down, okay, one, which is your die roll of six. Then you go one, two, which is you go over two columns in the weapons chart to find out what how much damage you did. So, Chris has mentioned that's D6.3. I'm assuming that is talking exactly about. Basically, I was talking about this is the way I was talking about, which is in the case of range effect weapons, a positive number modifies die roll. If the result exceeds the highest number of the chart, then take any additional shifts by moving the highest number result on the next higher column. One column per shift, as I mentioned, which is interesting. And one thing they do mention, negative modifiers cannot reduce a die roll below one, which is interesting by itself, meaning that you can actually have a die roll modifier of a minus. So you can improve it. I forget if that works with EW or not. I'm sure Chris knows. We'll find out next week. Okay, moving into actually E2, and these are phasers. And then it just talks about the different types of phasers. You got the 1, 2, 3, and 4, and the Gatling phasers, of course, is beginning rules. So it doesn't have the Omegas and all their kinds of phasers. And it talks about, you know, okay, both phaser 1 and phaser 2, they both take 1 point of energy. Of course, phasers use a capacitive system. Just looking to see where that's mentioned. Does it mention it? No, it doesn't mention here. Oh, there it is. Here it is. The energy portion, which is E2.22, which is players must allocate the energy allocation or have reserve power available to be able to fire the phaser. The power must pass through the phaser capacitor system to be used for the phaser. See the rules. Energy allocation would be 3.0, which we totally skipped. and phaser capacitors, which is also detailed in H6.22, which is energy systems, which is interesting that it talks about it. In my mind, it's kind of interesting that the capacitor system is actually moved to the energy section, but that's the way it works. And also it mentions that you can fire weapons, you know, phaser weapons as a lower powered version of itself. In theory, and this is, you can do this. It's kind of wonky. And unless you really are just trying to reduce the amount of damage, which there are some chance, there are scenarios where that is the case, you can actually fire a phaser 1 as a phaser 2. Why you would ever do that? But as I said, it would have to be a unique scenario where that would happen. Obviously, if you repair a phaser 1 as a phaser 2, that's one way of doing it, which overall, for most times, I can see that happening. Repairing a phaser 1 as a phaser 2 for a smaller ship, like a destroyer, where you only have like a EDR damage control rating of 2 versus a cruiser, which has a damage control rating of 4, because it takes 5 points of repair to repair a phaser 2, takes 8 points of repair to repair a phaser 1. I'm doing this from memory. So if someone knows that differently, please raise your hand and tell me that I'm wrong. I'm doing that completely from memory. Oh, and of course, a reminder with an E2.3, which is energizing phasers, which is if you start with a weapon stat at 0, the first thing you have to do is you have to spend one turn turning on your phasers, means enable, you know, it's kind of like priming. You're priming your phasers, your phaser capacitor system. You have to spend a turn just kind of warming it all up. that kind of thing, which is interesting, you know. Now, and also a reminder now, the thing is, to be honest, I'm not sure why they have these rules. And this rule is this. Maintainability. The capacitor system of a unit remains energized for 25 turns after the last time a phaser was fired or one point of energy was expended for energization. Sorry. Energy already in the capacitor could be expended to recharge them, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So basically, it talks about how phasers, if you just charge them and you do nothing with them for 25 turns, that they're dead. So now, the reason why I see why they have this rule is like, how many games do you know that actually would last 25 turns? I'm sure there is a reason for this. You know, possibly, for all I know, it's possible as a precursor explainer to why weapon status zero, you actually have to warm up your phasers because of it only will last so much. Something like that. That is true. But Dave, to be honest, how many people actually play Stumbling Battle? Because usually the only time you ever have Stumbling Battles is, you know, like, I can't even imagine doing a Stumbling Battle. I mean, okay, Stumbling Battles are a unique thing. Stumbling Battles are normally, if I recall correctly, are normally done within a single hex. And I have to look up sublet movement and so forth. Well, at the same time, we're playing sublight. Usually, we're combining sublight with warp, which means that warp can move a lot faster through a larger space. So I'd have to. I could have sworn that you can take a hex and then blow it up for sublight battles. And then what happens is that your speed within that hex on a sublight battle is based on the number of impulse power that you use for movement. Which, as I said, it's a weird idea, but this is sublight battles you're talking about. So, anywho, moving onward and forward. And of course, just a reminder that phasers, normal phasers, I'm not talking about X-ships. In this one it says, phasers cannot be overloaded, including X-ships. Of course, E3 is disruptor bolts. And this procedure is basically you have to charge it either using reserve power or regular power using 2 points of energy. Rate of firing, of course, is once per turn and only can fire once every 8 impulses. The source of energy is any kind of energy you got. Procedure is the standard procedure, which is the number of damage points scored by a disruptor is determined by the range. You know, a hit or miss system referred to the, you know, the disruptor bolt chart, which again is the hit or miss system. The maximum range of a disruptor expressed in terms of effective range is determined with each ship class that carries them. This actually is talking about, how depending upon, here's something that I will talk about this in just a moment, but basically that the range for a disruptor is based on the size of the ship. So a frigate can't fire out to range 30. Only like a cruiser can fire out to range 30 when it comes to its disruptors. When it comes to disruptors, a frigate can only can fire out to like range 15. Actually, no, actually, I think they can throw out to like 22, and PFs only can fire out to range 15. But basically, the idea is that based on the size class of the ship, the disruptor bolts are actually smaller. And of course, we all have, there's the UIM module, which they mentioned here. It's in D6.5, which increased the effectiveness for medium ranges. And then, of course, DURFAX, Disruptor Extended Range Firing and Attenuation Control System. I'm willing to bet that was a retronym. That's designed so that all disruptors firing at effective ranges 23 to 30 is resolved as a range 22. So basically, it allows the long range disruptors to be more effective. And I'm sure the feds were not happy with this. Now, okay, photons are photons. They're the same kind of hit or miss weapon. Arming is a little more tricky with photons, because photons, number one, to arm a photon torpedo, 2 points of warp energy must be allocated for a specific photon torpedo tube on each of two consecutive turns. Which, if you think about that, that's a lot of energy. Over two turns for four photons, that's 16 points of energy. That's a lot. Dave's mentioning photons, a mean-spirited weapon full of bitterness and hate. Yeah, bitterness, I will agree there. Now, of course, one of the requirements is warp energy, which means, of course, you can't move as fast. Just purely by when it comes to the amount of warp you have available. So that's one of those annoying things. But also, one thing to mention here, that there's only one size of photon torpedo. Now, I recall hearing that actually, there was supposed to be other sizes. And if you look at the designer's manual, P6, module P6, they talk about, different sizes of photon torpedoes. And I know that there are actually different sizes of photon torpedoes in the Omega Octant for the FRA. That's it. Yes. Yes, Chris. Hit on the heads. But originally, it was supposed to be, the Fed was supposed to have it too. For example, the destroyers that currently only have two photons were supposed to have four photons, but they're supposed to be mini photons. At least there was an idea of having that going forward. I'd have to check the design, the module P6, to know a little more history about that, because of that. That's where he mentions it and actually talks about in the designer's book. He talks about mini, regular, and max. Basically a stronger weapon, which would therefore be put on like the dreadnoughts. Dreadnoughts wouldn't have six or eight for a battleship. They'd have these megaphotons. So they'd do more damage, but and take up more power, but you'd have the same number of weapons, which would be, in my mind, quite interesting, because of that's what happened with the Andromedans, is that originally they had one kind of TR beam. And then they split that into TR heavies and TR lights, which I I say I'm annoyed at, but yeah, I'm not quite sure. For one of those advanced rules is proximity fuses. With proximity fuses are always a pain because of, here's just a mention of this in the rules, E4.31, records. A photon torpedo that is carrying a proximity warhead must be recorded as such when the second turn's arming is recorded. So in other words, a proximity warhead gets put into the to that torpedo on the second turn of arming. And at that point, you can't change it. You can't remove that out of the torpedo itself. And it mentions that you probably should mark it with like a P. Proximity photons have a range, can fire at ranges 9 or more. So in other words, you can't fire it at closer than 8 hexes. But the benefit of proximity warheads or of proximity fuses are of course that it for example is that it's better die roll. Okay, at a range of 9 or more hexes, 2 is subtracted from the die roll when rolling the determined if the torpedo has hit. So it's a better to hit. But the problem is, of course, also the warhead strength is halved. So it does 4 points instead of 8 points of damage. So, the question is, again, do you want greater punch, but less possibility to hit, or, you know, greater possibility to hit, but a lesser punch? If you think about it, actually, overall, it would be a better idea to do proximity if you have a large number of the ships. At a long range, that is. Of course, overloads, which is always fun because of you can. The photons are unique in that it allows you to have the warhead strength for when it comes to overloads is variable. You can be 9 through 16, and depending upon how much energy you put into that overload, you can do more or less damage, you know, and as mentioned here, okay, total energy being 4.5. So if you put just a half point of energy into it, you're overloaded by half a point, then warhead strength is now a 9 instead of 8. Give feedback of one that talks about the feedback of when you're close in range. Now, the holding cost is now 1.25. And that's if you're using fractional. And energy cost, you know, if you have you've put 1 point of power to overload it, now that's a warhead strength of 10. Again, holding of 1.25 points of power. So it can be, so it's one of those few weapons that you actually can overload variables. You can define how much damage you want to do, which actually in the case of photons are good because of if you put, yeah, yes, everybody wants a fully overloaded photon, 16 points of damage, maximum punch, but that costs a full 8 points of energy into it. So like 4 and 4 or 4 or 2 and 6, that's a lot of energy. It might take you up to 3 turns to fully overload a photon without. The reason I say that is because of if you try to do 4 and 4, that's 6. If you have 4 photons, that's 16 points of power for 1 turn. And how much power do you normally have? A fed heavy cruiser has around 38 points of power. So if you have almost a little less than half your power into photons, you're not going that fast. Because even standard, because you got 16 points of power into photons, you got 4 points of just housekeeping, you know, fire control, life support, and shields. That's 20 points. 20 points, that means you got eight. You can move speed 18. And that's if you're assuming that you don't charge anything else. No special shuttles, no recharging your phasers, nothing. And most probably, you're not going to be doing that. Moving onward and forward, we have a unique direct fire weapon, which is the ADRAX. ADRAX or anti-drones, sorry. I really should be clear about this. They're called ADRAX because they're anti-drone drones. But, and you know, they're a direct fire weapon that has ammunition, you know. And the idea is to get your drones at range 2. Well, actually, no, range 1. Range 3 is the best. I'm sorry. Thank you, Chris. Which is range 3, an ADRAC hits on 1 to 4. At range 2, it's 1 to 3, and range 1 is 1 to 2. So, in other words, you want it at that range 3 so that you have a chance of best chance of killing it. And the great thing about anti-drones is that one anti-drone ammunition, one shot, will kill a drone. So it's not like you're doing a phaser to destroy a drone. Because a drone, let's say a type 1 drone, takes 4 points of damage to kill. That means for a phaser, you have to make sure that you do at least 4 points of damage. In the case of a phaser 3, yeah, you got a good chance of doing that. Even up to range 1. Range 1 for a phaser 3 is not bad. You got 2/3 chance of killing it. 2/3. With phaser 3, there is no guarantee. Even if you range 0, you know, let's say that it's target a different ship. It's going to give 5/6 chance of killing a type 1 drone, assuming no armor and so forth. I'm assuming standard drone here. So an anti-drone is so much better than that, because one fire, boom, and it can be gone. It's also, remember, about anti-drone racks, it's a drone rack, which means it's zero power, which means that you have a lot more power to do other things, especially when it comes to your phasers, like, oh, kill your enemy. So it's a neat weapon. It can fire more than one time. Okay, of course, we have alternate targets for ADRACs, which is, of course, shuttles. If you fire an ADRAC at a shuttle and you hit the shuttle, then you have to roll a D6 to find out how much damage you did to that shuttle. But other than shuttles, other targets, says the Ed Warhead is too small to score even a single point of damage on a ship-based PF asteroid, ESG field, or anything larger than a shuttle or a drone. An ad cannot be fired through an ESG field and cannot damage that field. So it's still it's a physical object. An anti-drone round is a physical object. So it can't go through ESG because it just goes poof. It disappears. Anti-drones can be fired at mines, which is an interesting thing to note. Under standard restrictions, range 1 held in a tractor. You know, this is for anti-mine work. But this is not recommended, as the mine will be triggered and explode, or if a capture will fire on the next direct fire or seeking weapon launch phase as appropriate. So, in other words, don't do that. Unless you're trying to explode the mine, and you're desperate that you want to get rid of the mine, and you're willing to take the damage onto your shields, don't do it. And of course, alternate ammunition. Just a reminder: you can fill a drone rack, an ad rack, with dogfight drones, which don't do that much damage, except for against, of course, shuttles. Of course, reloading, MCIDS. It's standard. Monster close in defense system. I'm not gonna go through it very much because I don't think anyone's really that interested. And as is, it's getting a little late. I think I'm gonna wrap up for this evening. What I'm probably gonna do is I'm gonna probably continue on when it comes to some of the weapons discussion for the E section. I might do that, or I might go to D section and go over the general rules, because I think it's more important to talk about the general rules of these different sections than is to get into individual systems. Because I think it's more important to lay that base down. So anyway, with that, I am Paul Franz, and I bid you a good night.